A hot breath crossover. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 202.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you today. It is Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend, and I hope you have a great week ahead. Today on the show, we have a fantastic show. I have Joel Byers from the Hot Breath Podcast on the podcast today, and we did a big crossover episode. What does that mean? Well, this is what it means for you. It means you're going to listen to part one right now on the Art of Bombing podcast, and then you're going to hear it come to an end, and you're going to be like, oh my goodness, this isn't over. Why? They just cut it off in the middle of a conversation. And that's because in order to listen to part two, you're going to go over to the Hot Breath podcast, and you're going to listen to part two of our conversation. And that's why it is a crossover episode. Woo! It's going to be a good time. So while you're over on the Hot Breath podcast listening to the Art of Bombing Joel Byers episode part two, you should check out some of his other episodes. He gets some great guests over there, and they really get into the nuts and bolts of stand-up comedy. So if you're an aspiring comedian, it is a good podcast for you to check out and listen, because you're probably going to learn a lot of valuable insight. So that's what's coming up on today's show. But, you know, before we get there, we got to handle a few things. Got to handle some housekeeping. The first thing it's going to be a little bit of a downer, but I do want to mention this. I want to say this real quick. Unfortunately, over the weekend, the Hot Breath family lost one of their members unexpectedly. PJ Keen was a comedian from the East Coast, and he was a big part of the Hot Breath family. And unfortunately, he passed away unexpectedly over the weekend. And so I just wanted to take a moment to send my sorrows and sympathies and my condolences to PJ's friends, families, and the whole Hot Breath universe. I'm thinking about you. And I knew him. I knew PJ online. I don't think I did any shows with him virtually, but we did. We were on a streaming show. We were on a Behind the Bits stream where I met him, and then, you know, we kind of had some interactions online here and there just throughout the Comedy's Writer Room, which is presented by Hot Breath. That's a great Facebook group if you're not on it, and Joel and I talk about that. But he was a big active member, and like I said, I didn't know him very well, but from what I did know him, he was a very, very kind and sweet guy, and it's the world lost a great person. And so, again, just wanted to give my condolences to PJ's friends and families and the whole Hot Breath family. And I do believe the Hot Breath Media, if you go over to the Hot Breath Podcast Media page on Facebook, they're also doing a little fundraiser to help PJ's family in this time, to help with the funeral expenses and things like that. So if you have the means and you have a little extra money and you feel like doing something nice, why don't you head over to the Hot Breath Podcast Media page and see how you can donate to help with everything that's going on. So, all right, now I know that it's hard to transition out of a serious moment, but before we get into this conversation with Joel, just a couple quick things. Again, I want to remind everybody that listens to this podcast, I get a lot of requests for people who want to be on it, and as much as I would love to have every comedian out there on the podcast, I just can't do it. I don't have the time, and I can't, because I only release one episode a week, typically, so I don't have the means to release a new episode every day, and that's what would happen if I talked to every comedian. But I found a solution for that. What you can do is, if you have a great bombing story that you want to share, and I haven't, you know, even if you've been on the podcast and you've been wanting to come back, and you've got a new story, but if you have a story that you want to tell, you can do that now on the website. You can go to artofbombingpod.com. bombsquad.com/submit-a-bomb. And from there, you can either call the Bomb Squad hotline and tell your bombing story in your own words, or you can type it out. And then what's going to happen is I may play the audio or read the letter on a future episode of the podcast. If you write it in, there's a good chance that I may feature it in the monthly newsletter under the Bomb of the Month. So if you got a cool bombing story that you want to share, go out, like I said, go to theartofbombingpod.com /submit-a-bomb. While you're there, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you're liking all the Facebook posts, sharing the Facebook posts. Most importantly, give us a 5-star rating. Leave us a nice review. That definitely helps. If you want to support the show financially, if you appreciate what I'm doing with this podcast and you want to help, one way you can show your support is you can buy me a beer. What? That's right. You can buy me a beer by going to buymeacoffee.com/dbubcomedy. That's buymeacoffee.com/dbubcomedy. And from there, you can contribute to buy me a beer if you like. I know it says buymeacoffee.com, but I'm more of a beer guy than a coffee guy. Either way, I'll probably spend it on coffee and beer, so it's really both. But if you want to show your support, you can do that. If you appreciate what I'm doing, that's a nice little way to contribute. And the last thing I want to talk about is I have a show. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, I will be in Tomahawk, Wisconsin at Outboards Bar and Grill with Frank Roach. That is Thursday, May 13th. Show's at 8:30, doors at 7:30. If you know anybody in the Tomahawk, Wisconsin area, go check that show out because it's going to be a good time. I worked with Frank last month over in Michigan, and we had fun. And I'm sure this show's going to be fun as well. All right, that's all I got for the housekeeping this week. Thanks again for supporting the show. And here is part one of two. And remember, to get part two, you got to go over to the Hot Breath podcast. But here's part one with Joel Byers. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I wish someone warned me about the wedding planning, though. Oh, my. I would rather plan a divorce. No one warned me of the interrogation that was going to happen. Every day, my wife would just wake me up with her eyes wide open. Who's the band going to be? What's our hashtag going to be? I was like, I'm good with whatever your parents pay for. I defer to Ann and Randall. Let's talk to the investors on this. Because I'm still paying off your rings. Yeah, congratulations, ladies. You get two rings. That's why we get paid more. It's a ring tax. Yeah, Beyonce didn't tell us that part, did she? She just said, put a ring on it. She's like, if you like it, then you gotta put a ring on it. She forgot to mention, but if you love her, you gotta put another ring on it. And then there's a ring tax you gotta keep paying. Oh, no, 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 no. It was all worth it, though, man. I tell you, the wedding is like an emotional release. Like, I'm... like... I cried a suspicious amount. It was cute at first. People were like, oh, he loves her. But then it escalated to, oh. He's about to confess. But it is emotional. I think anybody who's married in here, any man, when you... when you see your wife walking down the aisle... and it hits you. That's it. The wedding planning's over. Moves you to tears. Oh. And then my wife started, she saw me crying, and then she started crying because we were getting behind schedule.
So have you did any shows? Are things open? You're in Atlanta, Georgia, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Is Atlanta, Georgia open or opening back up?
I think it's open here and there. I think there people have been doing outdoor shows, some and starting to since it's warmed up again. But, like, I've been so out of it, Dan. Like, last year I did two gigs. One was a college, and then one was, like, an outdoor show preparing for that show. Like, I hadn't been on stage all year, and I was like, I've got to get some sort of stage time.
Right?
So it's, like, the middle of winter, and I'm outdoors doing this show in the winter just trying to get my legs back from not doing stand-up for so long. And now I think outdoor shows are starting to become more prevalent. Mm-hmm. But I've been so out of the scene, honestly don't know what has been happening. I've just been focusing on, like, my podcast and the community around it. And just focusing on what I can control, which is that, and not what live shows are coming back. And whenever I get vaccinated, I'm definitely going to be hitting the ground running. But I'm just being productive where I can right now.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a, you know, I've talked about it before on this podcast too, but there's a lot of comics that just kind of fell to the wayside waiting for everything to open back up, you know, where there's other people who were like, well, if I can't do comedy, let's focus on some of my other things like this, like podcasting, very similar to you in the fact that that's what I've been focusing on. Like, I put way more into my podcast this last year than all the years prior because, you know, you're busy doing stand up and that's the focus.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows too, Dan. I mean, you know, you've been doing yours like 4 years. I think I've been doing mine like five. So, I mean, you know, that grind of doing a podcast and like when like pandemic hit, it was kind of like, oh no, because you've been in the game over 10 years like I have as well. So it was that moment of like, oh no, my entire career. But then it's like, well, I have this podcast I can go all in on. And it's just putting that energy there and just getting the return of it with other comics seeking that outlet as well. It's been very rewarding, but it's just a lot of comics. You know, I know comics who went back to Uber and moved back home and, like, you know, comics that had the credits, had the TV credits and the agents. And then everything just dries up and they're like, oh, no, what now type deal.
Yeah.
So we're all just trying to figure it out. But I think people who are able to innovate and just remain productive in these uncertain times are going to have the long-term return from it.
Oh, absolutely. And now, I mean, thankfully, you know, with vaccines and stuff, people getting vaccinated, things are opening back up. I mean, where I'm at, things have been reduced, but they weren't ever really closed for, like, a long period of time. Like, the first couple months of the pandemic, everything was shut down around here, and then it opened back up during the summer, and then it shut down again during the holidays. So it was like, you know, but it was still all, like, brief. So there's been shows indoor, and, I mean, we can't do outdoor shows in the wintertime where we're at. I mean, we could. might get a little cold.
Just a little bit. Yeah, so it's, I guess we've been reduced as well, but it's, I don't know. So, and then some people have been just, I know the a friend of mine here in Atlanta, he asked me to do his show, and I saw pictures of it, and I was like, looks like you're having a COVID party in there, bro. I mean, I'll wait on that one.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being safe. I just actually did a show in Michigan this last weekend, and it was packed. You know, I still wear my mask and try to be safe as I can, but I also need money. So I was like, you know, do the gig, but
I also need money. Yeah.
You know, but it's like, I'm going to be safe. You guys do you, but I'm doing me.
Yeah. It's so weird to get back on stage. And I bet comics listening to this, like, if they haven't been back on stage yet, or they've been back on stage a few times, like, it really is. Like, I did that college. And then after that, I didn't perform again until probably, it may have been a week ago now, where I did my first show back where I did 20 minutes. The college was like 30 or 40. I think it was 40. The whole drive there, I was just rehearsing. I was just like, what up? Yeah. I was like starting over in comedy again. I was freaking out. But it ended up going fine because I was just so prepared for it. But then the outdoor show I did, where it was an outdoor show I was featuring. Thank goodness, because I was a little bummed. I was like, I should be headlining. And then after the set, I was like, I'm so grateful I was featuring this show. 20 minutes, dude. Like, to be up there, I didn't take it as serious as the college. I was like, oh, I got this. I've been doing comedy. I've been writing. And then you really got to find your timing and your comfort zone up there again. So it's a process of getting back on that bike.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely been listening to a lot of my older sets, but like the longer ones, you know,
mm-hmm.
like headlining and featuring sets. In fact, I even did that driving between gigs. I had a gig, you know, in, like I said, in Michigan, and then I went down to Indiana, and on my way to Indiana, I was listening to my sets just to, you know, because yes. even though the show the night before went fine, but I was still like, we better, you know, we've been performing sporadically, so...
Exactly, dude. It's such a momentum game, especially in like stand up. Is just like we live on stage, and like one show leads to the next, and it's like as soon as you're off stage, all right, where's the next gig? And it really is that, you know. And I know you've interviewed over like 200 comics, and I'm sure you've heard this as well. And the comics I've interviewed on my show, like the number one advice has been, you've got to get on stage.
Yep.
Like you have to put in the reps on stage. That's really where you learn the craft. Like you can take classes, learn the fundamentals, but at the end of the day, if you're not using what you've learned, it's not going to work. And at the end of the day, you've got to get on stage. That's where the comedy sword is honed, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, since you haven't been really doing any live shows, have you did anything virtually? I mean, you've been doing tons with your podcast, obviously, but have you mm-hmm. did any like virtual shows? Have you dabbled in that at all?
I've dabbled in some. I've been able to like parlay some paid Zoom shows, actually, which has been a lot of fun because it's such a short commute, and I got paid more for some of these Zoom shows than I had like driving like 6 hours for stuff.
Right.
Like, I mean, 12 hours, really, if I'm going to keep it completely real. So they're definitely different. You know, it's a different animal. It's still fun. I mean, I've found you can still get like a gauge and read on your material, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. Like the timing is weird, but I think just the overall jokes, you can really get a read on how the response will be on a live show. I haven't been doing them all the time. I know there's plenty of Zoom open mics out there. There's so many at this point. But I've been a little more selective in the ones I've done, to where it is more of like there's an audience or it's like a paid gig and something for like a birthday party or something like that. So I've done some, but I haven't made it part of like my weekly ritual. But it's something that I don't think is going away. I really don't think
either.
That even when like live shows come back, I think this is going to be an option for people that don't want to go out and be public or want to just take it easy and relax and get entertained. Like, I think there's definitely, I think there's a live component that's just now being explored with even like, I would be interested to produce a show that then is live streamed to where people can pay tickets online to view it. And there's some mm-hmm. people already experimenting with that. I know the Comedy Cellar is doing that and a few others.
Yeah, I think.
But I think that's a format that's only going to continue to grow and evolve as well.
Oh, absolutely. And that's great because even if the clubs get like back to full, you know, maximum capacity, and they have a comic and they sell out now because they have the capabilities, if they've set up to do, you know, the streaming to Zoom, they can sell discounted tickets and, you know, to help with the oversell. And so that's just more income that they can, you know, potentially make. Exactly. So I definitely think it's going to stick around.
Yeah, I think so. And even with festivals, I think there's going to be a virtual component to festivals that people can attend the festival without actually being there. Like I think that will be like a positive that's come out of this, is just that innovation. So, mm-hmm. and comedy is, you know, in demand now, arguably more than ever. So as comics, you know, it's our opportunity to really like create our own success here, leverage the technology, leverage the opportunity, and really pave our own path in this new frontier of comedy. I truly, truly believe that. I think, I think the playing field has been leveled again. And I think now more than ever, comics have the power, whether you've been a year in or 10 years in. I think this is the opportunity to really find your path.
Yep. And it's crazy. I don't know, if, for me anyway, to think that there are actual comics that have never performed live. They started doing stand-up comedy virtually, and they've only performed virtually. And that blows my mind.
There's a lot of people. We have a Facebook group now. We have, like, a Hot Breath a writing room Facebook group. And there's comics in there who were always aspired to be comics. And then we do this daily writing club in there called the Write 10 Club, where we get a new word and write a new joke in 10 minutes.
People join the group. You just did that. I mean, you just celebrated 1 year of doing that, right?
We did. Yeah, just a few weeks ago, man. A year of doing it every single day. The mental breakdowns and all. The people who have been in there, and I've had some mental breakdowns in there, and it's been a journey for sure. But people, some would tune in just to watch and hope I broke down, and then they'd start writing, and then they would eventually like get curious and be like, well, I've always wanted to try it. Why not try? And then they would attend one of our Zoom shows, and then they would end up performing on it. I've seen like people go from never doing comedy, maybe writing a little bit here and there, to then attending shows and then to actually performing on Zoom shows, all because of just the pandemic and people really tapping into the curiosity and just saying, why not? And it is weird that there's a new generation coming up of like Zoom comics in a sense.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it.
You got to get on stage.
Yep. When
it opens back up, Zoom, like stand up is on stage, my children. Stand up is on stage.
Yeah. I hope they do when things open up. I hope these comics do actually try. I hope they don't, you know, get intimidated, because performing live can be very intimidating. You know, performing on Zoom is still, I mean, just performing comedy is intimidating and can be very, you can still have the nerves, but it's a lot easier, I feel like, doing it virtually, because it's like, if it don't go well, you just shut your computer and walk away, you know? If it don't go well live, you have to walk through the room to leave.
Yep, exactly. I've been there, and that's why I think it's so important to have a show like yours talking about the art of Bob, you know, and even a benchmark question on my show is asking people, you know, your worst boo story or like your worst bomb, because I started interviewing comics in Atlanta when I first started, and every comic from Atlanta has a boo story because there's shows that are known to like boo you and things like that. So that just became a question that I would ask all the comics. And that is, it's an important part. And Kyle Kinane, when we did a Q&A with him, said, if you're not bombing, you're not trying. Like, you're learning through bombing. You know, when you record your sets and you bomb, you've got to go back and listen. That's like the black box of like a plane crash, where you go back and listen to what went wrong and how you can refine it. And it's an important part of it that Zoom, you don't get the full experience.
Nope.
But I'm hoping that, especially like in Hot Breath, we're all about positivity and being supportive. And I'm hoping that positivity will seep into people's comedy scenes. So it is less intimidating. It's less competitive. Because I know when I started, man, I mean, I was alone and confused. Just like, what?
Right.
How do I be cool? Do I need a flannel shirt to get on that show? How do I get on these cool shows?
Do I need to buy
at
a hoodie?
In the morning. It's like, I never got on the cool shows. So I ended up having to produce my own shows and just make my own way. So I'm hoping the next generation of comics don't have to struggle with all that energy and just focus on getting good at comedy instead of like, why not me? You know, just I'm hoping that the next generation isn't competitive and it's more supportive. That's what I really hope.
Well, and that definitely, that's a good goal and a vision, because comedy, there's a lot of negativity in comedy. I mean, when people think about comedy, they think, oh, it's just comedy. It should be the great and it's all fun. No, there's a lot of toxic negativity in comedy, because like you said, it can be very competitive. But ultimately, you know, one thing I've seen, you know, especially with comedy scenes, is if there are people that are really good in the scene and they're really starting to shine, that's good for the whole scene, because then other people are looking, you know, people are looking at that scene now and they're looking for the next people that are going to come out of that scene, you know? So to think that it's just you against everybody else, well, yes, at a certain level, it is competitive and we're all trying to get work and get paid and do our things. We all have our own path, but at the same time, it is very team oriented, in the sense that if one person, you know, if a few people are succeeding in a scene, other people are going to have the potential to succeed as well.
Yeah, and there's enough to go around as well. Like there's enough opportunities, there's enough shows, there's enough gigs, like there's enough to go around. That scarcity mentality, it's a waste of time. And I think the more we can become, you know, more that camaraderie like you're talking about. I even heard Andrew Schultz talking about how like comedy is more of a team sport now, and what he's done with his team, with Alex Media and Akash and all of them on his team, that they've been able to create that incredible platform and media company, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, you can go at it alone. He's like, but you're competing with people like us now. Like, it's a team sport, and you're on stage alone, but they even write jokes together. They're bouncing ideas off, you know, like there's enough room for everyone. You're alone on that stage, but you don't have to be alone off the stage, you know?
Nope. Absolutely. Outside of that. I mean, another good example of that would be All Things Comedy. I mean, that's, you know, that mm-hmm. was set up by comics. That's, you know, Bill Burr's one of the owners, and I forget who the other owner is, but either way, but
Al, it was Magical.
There you go. Al, there we go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's another good example of, you know, teaming up to do something.
Yep.
You know, so
exactly,
definitely, you know, you're right. It's definitely a team sport off stage. But to kind of transition back, well, real quick, to talk about the Right 10, what inspired you to kind of just decide that we're going to do this every day and go? Because you, and I imagine you probably didn't expect it to grow into what it did. Did you? I mean, you did. I mean, you would hope that it would, but you probably had no idea it was going to. You were just like, I want to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea. Honestly, it was me at the beginning of the pandemic, like, oh my gosh. Like, I know myself, like, I need to be held accountable. I need some sort of system to hold me accountable to do things or I won't. I just know that about myself. And I knew that I wouldn't write unless I had some sort of accountability system built in. So I was like, oh, I'll just get online and write every day. So I would just, instead of trying to force myself to sit down and write, I was like, all right, at 10 a.m. every day, I'm getting on Facebook and I'm going to write a joke. And it started with that on my personal page, live streaming to, hey, I'm going to write a joke. And then just for me to have to say I'm accountable to whoever is on the other end of the internet there. Mm-hmm. And the people ended up watching and they ended up like asking me what I'm writing. And then it turned into like a collaborative effort to where people are like, yeah, let's write together. And then people were showing up to write with me. And then I was reading my jokes and reading their jokes, and they were sharing their jokes in the comments. And then it grew into the Facebook group that now grew. We have like a Write 10 contest every month as well, where the winner gets $100. And it's really grown into just like a daily writing club with comics. Dude, there's like comics in Australia that stay up till midnight to do mm-hmm. it. And there's like comedians in India. I mean, every continent except Antarctica. We're coming for you, Antarctica.
Who's going to be the comic that moves to Antarctica? Not me. I'm trying to get out of the wasteland.
Yeah, you're practically there. Yeah, you're close enough.
Well, I'm trying to get away.
Yeah, you mentioned the ATL or something.
Yeah, there's a possibility. It's it all kind of boils down to my fiance's job. There's going to be a position opening up there and a couple other places that she can apply for that, you know, she might bring us in that direction. Nothing's set in stone yet, so I don't want to jinx myself, but it is a possibility. It's definitely, you know, and if it does take place, it'll be, you know, I would imagine it's within a year, you know, by the end of the year, it would probably be that. I mean, right now, she's actually, she's the acting deputy for the ATL office, so
oh,
she's
snap.
Already kind of doing a detail there. I mean, it's remote, but yeah. So yeah.
Yeah,
so there's definitely a good possibility.
Yeah, it's a cool scene, man, and there's a lot of stage time here, and that's what's great. I mean, comedy is booming, so like scenes are booming as well, and scenes are getting more and more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And that was me, like, producing my own shows and my own scene, producing my own tours, and even like producing the Right 10 Club. It's all, my whole career has boiled down to whenever I got over being bitter about not being on Conan. Why am I not on Conan? Dude, like, it's so funny, and you can probably share in this, and doing a podcast so long is like the evolution of our own mindsets within our careers. Like there was phases in the podcast where I just asked every comedian, why won't Conan book me? There's a conspiracy against, they don't want Joel on the show. And it's like, at the end of the day, what I've learned in 11 years of doing this is you can only focus on what you can control. You can only focus on what you can control. Don't focus on what so-and-so got. That's for them. That's not for you. Don't focus on why this booker doesn't respond to your email. That booker gets 50 emails every hour. Don't worry about it. It's not a conspiracy. The booker doesn't care. The booker doesn't even think about it. Like, I've interviewed plenty of bookers, and not one has been like, you know, we just hate people that aren't our friends, and we're not going to book them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you run a show, you will start to understand how much work goes into it, and a lot of the booking is down to convenience.
Yeah,
who's
absolutely
top of mind? Who's around? Like, it boils down to so many different things that are out of your control. What you can control in this game is how hard you're working, the opportunities you're creating for yourself. Are you writing? Are you attempting to produce your own shows? Are you attempting to connect with other comics and other scenes and get out on the road and build up that way? So it's just focusing on what you can control is something I still have to remind myself about. I mean, I was on Instagram
absolutely
today, like, like looking at friends who I'm like, that's so cool they're doing that. Why am I not doing that?
It's definitely easy to get caught in that mindset.
I have to remind myself, but I'm telling you, comics listening to this, that's the number one thing.
That's
the number
the
one
setback,
thing.
Really.
Yeah, it's only going to hold you back worrying about other people and why not me. Yeah. Create your own success.
Yeah,
because
that's
my own comedy.
Just to speak on that, that's the time you're focusing on wondering why you're not doing what they're doing. You could be working on your own stuff to get to your, you know, on your path to get to where they're at.
Exactly. Yeah. Preach.
Yeah. Yep, that's definitely. I know my favorite though are comics who do the work, but they don't want to email bookers or ask for stage time. They just, they do the work and they're just waiting for somebody to book them. And then they're like,
and that was me.
Why are you not getting booked? Well, are you asking? It's like, well, I don't want to bother them. And I'm like, well, there's so many comics out there. It's that out of sight, out of mind. You know, for every one comic that doesn't want to harass a booker, there's 10 that are. And so when they need to fill one, those 10 that are in their brain are who they're going to reach out to, not the one person that, you know, is trying to be polite and considerate and wait for their time.
Mine was like, oh, they should know. That was me. Like, cause I live on stage. Like, I would be on stage every chance I could get. Like, multiple times a night, I would do strip clubs, sidewalks, public buses, like wherever I could perform, I'm there, you know? So I was like, oh, the booker should hear about me. I'm out here grinding, you know? like, I had a lot of that complex as well of like, they should know. And it's like, when's the last time you emailed the booker? Well, I emailed them once. They didn't respond. They should know better. Like that would be part of it as well. I would complain about things that I wasn't actively trying to change, you know, and that's something we can get lost. It's easier to complain than to actually take action.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We get caught up in that a lot of the times too. So,
yeah, that's why social media is both good and bad because, you know, social media, obviously it's good to have to try to build a fan base, but then you start becoming, you know, networking with other comics. And instead of focusing on creating content and putting stuff out to build, you know, for the fans that you have, for one, and keep their attention and, you know, the retention, and then getting new fans, we're focused on what our comics are doing and, you know what they're doing and succeeding, that it becomes like this negative, you know, backfire where we should be using it to help our career. Instead, we're using it to not focus on our career because we're like, oh, I should be there, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's important for comics to know, like, I know I personally still struggle with this. I mean, I've interviewed comics 20 years in who still have to remind themselves of these things. So it's we're not saying that you're wrong for having these feelings. It's just learn from us that it'll make your journey a lot easier and more productive, and you'll find more opportunity and not getting caught up in this like hamster wheel of like jealousy and just excuses for why you're not where you think you should be, because that's what you were born to do.
Yep.
That you're not doing anything about.
Yep, absolutely. It goes back to what you said. You take care of the things you control, you know, what you can control. That's what you need to focus on. That is for sure. Now, speaking of things you can't control, I mean, you can learn from it, but we're going to transition to the bombing part. You can't be on the Art of Bombing and not tell a story about that time you bombed one of the shows where you felt like you really bombed bad.
There's so many. There's so many. And you know what's funny is I have like a box full of notebooks, Dan, and I have one called Shows, where a long time ago I started keeping up with like just horrible shows I had done. So you getting on here, and I've been a fan of your show for a while now, but I knew getting to come on here, I was like, I gotta find this thing, because like there's so many different ones, like we talk about with like the strip club and performing at Moose Lodges, and oh my gosh,
all the places where you wouldn't think comedy would be, but it does, but it is.
Yeah, seriously, all the places, like I karaoke nights, you know. But the one that really stuck out to me that I wrote was about, it was at a place in South Georgia called Mama's Country Showcase. And this was in June of 2014. I was headlining. This was like one of the first shows. I started comedy 2010. So about like 4 years into the game, you're headlining, baby.
When in 2010 did you start?
February 1st.
Oh, okay. Nice. I started the same year, September 2010.
Oh, very nice.
So you got me by like 8 months.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, we're all wily vets now. We're old OGs now. Old heads.
Already getting bitter. No.
So this was like a big deal. Like, you know, it was one of my first headlining shows. I was on the flyer. You know, like your face is on a flyer. You made it, baby. Like when you got your picture on a flyer, you made it 4 years in. And it's like, this was the moment where I'm headlining 4 years in, and then I'd heard comics be like, oh, you won't headline till 8 years in. And I'm like, 4 years in? Yeah, I got this. I went in just so arrogant. I'm like, I've been grinding. I've been hitting the mics open. I've been doing 5 minutes at a time. Sure, I can do 45.
I was just going to ask if, because you said it was a showcase, if that was going to be the headlining set, because that was one thing that blew my mind. Like when I lived out in California, you know, people would headline, but they were only doing 15, 20 minutes as a headliner spot because it was a showcase, and everybody else would do like 7 minutes and then the headliner would do 15.
Oh, and then you really just last, but you say you're the headliner?
Yeah, that's really a lot of what it is.
Yeah, headlining is 45 minutes.
Yeah, but, exactly.
It's a different ball game, that 45-minute set. But this was, the name of the venue was Mama's Country Showcase.
Oh, okay, okay. So, the venue was named. Okay, I thought that was the name of the show.
No, this was Mama's Country Showcase. I wrote this down, and the show was probably called Comedy. Like nothing. It probably wasn't not well promoted.
Comedy Night.
Yeah, not great. So this place, I mean, it had like the bar had saddles on it. The door handles on the front doors were door antlers, just to like give you a little picture of what was happening here. You know, I remember being on stage. Well, first off, it's a huge, like, it's like a line dancing venue. So it's just like a huge dance floor with like some tables around the side, bar on the side, and then a huge stage at the very end.
Probably for a huge band.
For like a huge stage for a huge band. It's just comedians. None of us were ready for this show, I will say that. But like, including the audience, I will add. The audience was not ready either. It ended up being like 12 people who I think were there like just drinking before line dancing started. And we're like, I guess we'll come sit over here. So just to paint the picture on my opening act, so we're in the South Georgia, Mama's Country Showcase. One of my dear friends in the game, David Perdue, who's a black comedian in Atlanta, goes before me. His set is going to a point to where he just starts singing the black national anthem. He was at a point, if he's like, fine, if you're not gonna laugh at anything, I'm just gonna do this. It was South Georgia, a bunch of like honkies. So he just sang this and then got off stage, and that's what I had to follow, basically. my first headlining set. The show's not going great for anyone. And then I have to go up there and headline. Now, me in my head, I'm the headliner. I got this. I'll turn the show around. All they got to do is hear my name and I'm going to get a standing ovation. Well, they've already sat through like six comics that did not do comedy that as advertised. So now it's my turn to get up there. Honestly, I don't even remember what I opened with. I just remember people leaving. And the but the problem about people leaving this show is that it, like, the lights are on in this huge venue with a big dance floor. So they don't leave the venue. You just see them get up and just walk about 20 feet over to the bar and then just sit down again and turn their backs to me. So it's like there's chairs and tables in front of the stage. They just get up, walk to the side, and then sit back down to just drink without having to stare at me.
Just making it very obvious that they didn't want to hear any more of your jokes.
Yes. Yes. And my favorite line I had was because, like, they all ended up just getting up and leaving, like, all 12 people. And what was a bad part of the timing of me being the headliner is that the line dancing crowd is starting to come in. So it's like, as I'm performing, people are starting to come in to be there for line dancing. This is Mama's Country Showcase, y'all. We're here to line dance. Why is Michael Cera on stage right now trying to do stand-up and bombing in front of empty chairs and tables? So my favorite line, I just remember saying at one point, because I got the light. I mean, I got the light literally like 15 minutes into my headlining set. I think the owner of the bar was like, can we just cut it so people can dance? Like, you guys ruined our entire night. I was probably getting paid in Zoloft. I mean, that's probably what I was getting paid for this night. But it turned into, I remember just saying when I got the light. Now, I remember being like, all right, I got the light. And I was like, you know what? I'm good with it. I'm good with light. I feel good about this set. I was like, you know, it takes a lot of a delusion to sit through all this apathy. I just remember saying that line. I was like, yeah, that's going to be on a t-shirt. And then I thought I had a merch idea, you know, but it's like one of those sets that in hindsight, I went up there and I don't remember, gosh, I wish I could remember what I said, Dan, but like, I just remember going up there, not addressing the audience, not engaging with the audience, not even addressing the show, what's been happening, look at where we, like, nothing, not addressing the elephant in the room of how this comedy show is not a comedy show, but just like an awkward talent show where no one has talent, you know? So I just go in there and I just start hitting with material like I'm going to be this headliner that turns it, not even creating connection with the audience, which is where a lot of the times a bombing can occur, is where you're not connecting with the audience. You're not listening to the audience. You're not getting a pulse on the room. Because, like, I've had shows where I was starting to bomb and like, and I, when I would like stop and I would like ask the audience, I'd be like, so where did I lose you? I was like, so a few of these jokes worked, but then it started going downhill around here. Was it this joke? And I actually would have a conversation with the audience just authentically creating a connection with them of like, okay, I realize that we realize that this is not going well. What went wrong? How can we get this back on track? And I've had moments where I've been able to turn shows because of that. But at 4 years in, at Mama's Country Showcase, where people are there to line dance, and like they're playing, people are line dancing to Michael Jackson. Like, it was a whole confusing situation.
It's very similar to like comedy shows at karaoke places, you know, yes. Where people they show up waiting for karaoke. They're like, why is there comedy? We just want to sing.
It's not good comedy. Like, Jim Gaffigan isn't showing up. You know, these are just comics trying to figure out how to do comedy in front of people who don't care about comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't even give you the benefit of the doubt. Like, well, he's trying. They're like, no, this isn't Jeff Foxworthy. What's happening right now? Like, we as comedians think comedy is a huge world, but most people don't know most comics. Like, they know, like, the top 1%, and then everything else is just, it doesn't exist. So we think we're artists and everyone knows everyone, but, like, even Mark Norman, you know, I tell my wife, I had Mark Norman on the podcast. She'll be like, who? I'll be like, yeah, I guess you're right. Okay. know, fine.
Yep. Yeah, that definitely happens a lot, too. I mean, there's so many, and there's so many comics, too. Even that happens to me. People will be like, oh, yeah, I'm working with so-and-so this weekend. And then I'm like, who?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm but even in comedy, and there's so many comics, I don't know all the comics.
It's true. It is true. But we all go through the bombing. We all go through that struggle. No one is immune to it.
Nope.
And I think that's why it's important. Like, I had to reflect on that set. And like I talk about the black box of that plane crash, what went wrong. And it really is. I didn't connect with the audience. I did not engage in an authentic way. I literally just went up there and started reciting material.
Yep.
Like, that's the best I knew how to do at the time as well. Like, you bomb because, yeah, you're trying and you're getting out of your comfort zone and you're really learning in the moment. And I was just doing the best of what I knew at the time, which 4 years in, I'm supposed to be doing like 40, 45 minutes. I'm doing every joke I've ever thought of everywhere. Like,
yep.
I have a set list. I'm going point A to point Z, and I have to hit every single joke so I can fill my time. That was my mindset. It wasn't to go in there and create an experience and create a connection with that audience. It was, I'm going in here to do this script. And sometimes going in scripted works. You catch them from the beginning and you can ride the wave and you can just stick to the script. Sometimes you've got to be able to pull audibles, and you learn how to pull audibles by failing to pull audibles a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you can start to recognize those moments to do it. And that's one at 4 years in that was a good learning experience for sure. But really one that, ooh, it hurt.
It does. Some of the best learning experiences, I mean, they do hurt the worst. I mean, that was how it was for me. I did a show, you know, the show that inspired this podcast, where it was a corporate event that I was doing where I bombed really bad. And there's a lot of,
been there.
Lot of elements that went into the, why it went the way it did. But I think back on that, and I'm like, if I did that same gig now, it might not have go the best, you know, because it's still a corporate gig, but it wouldn't have went like it did. It was a lack of experience.
That is the end of episode 202, part one. In order to get the rest of the conversation, now you need to head over to the Hot Breath podcast and listen to part two of the Art of Bombing, episode 202 with Joel Byers. Have a great day.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See
are we
guys.
Actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.